Hi, everybody. Jim Bakei, and the podcast is Be You, The World Will Adjust. Last week, I was talking about people accepting responsibility. And before I go in to welcome my guest, Michelle Schemmelt from NewMe, I just wanted to say that we are now 9 of 11 people in our family have had COVID. Myself and my wife still haven't had it. But what's amazing is the anger of people that have got or supposedly got it from us or whatever. They're like texting us, I can't believe you gave this to us. And we're like, you could have got it anywhere. So like everybody, just take a chill pill. Like nobody's giving it to you, right? You could be getting it anywhere. And so let's just relax. So Michelle, welcome. You were just saying that it was like 2010, 2012 we met. And I remember it as if it was yesterday. This bright, young, beautiful woman came into my office. She's working at RBC Capital Markets and looked at me and sort of said, I'm not really sure this is what I want to do. If I could tell you the number of people in my life that have told me that, the list would be long, but the number of people that actually did something about it, the list would be very, very short. She founded her own company. It's called NewMe and had a baby along the way as well. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Really great to connect with you again.
So tell us, here we are at RBC and you say, this isn't for me.
Yeah. Most of my family was in finance. So when I was graduating university, I was like, what am I going to do next? What am I going to do when I graduate? And you kind of look around at the people around you and you're like, okay, well, that looks good. And that's how I got into finance. The first couple of years trading, it was really great. It was fun. It was new. I was learning a lot. But then in my like kind of mid-20s, you know, you start to think, okay, like the excitement of the new job has really worn off. And you start thinking, okay, is this what I want to do, you know, for the rest of my life? And I always just had that nagging feeling inside of me that no, this isn't right. This isn't what I want to do for the next, you know, 20, 30 years. But I didn't know what else to do. After the financial crisis hit in the US, it kind of lagged and then hit in Canada and I was actually let go. And that was the best thing to have happened to me because I, you know, to be honest, Jim, I don't know if I would have been one of those people to take the leap because it's a really hard decision to actually walk away, especially, you know, I was pretty young. I was making pretty decent money. I was working at, you know, the biggest bank in Canada. From the outside, it all looked really good. So walking away from that into the unknown would have been a really, really difficult transition. So luckily for me, at least that decision was made for me. And I think this is at the time when you and I were connecting and I was really thinking about, okay, what do I want to do next? And so it's kind of exploring two paths. And one was maybe I wanted to stay in finance, but go to the buy side. So do a different role. And I was in New York. So I went down to New York and I was interviewing at hedge funds for investor relations roles. And I remember every meeting I would go into, I wasn't nervous about the interview because I was pretty confident in like what I could bring to the table, but I just had this like knot in my stomach as I walked through the office being like, no, I just can't do this again. And part of me also knew like if I got back into it, then like, you know, it would be like extra hard to get out. And so at the same time, I'd always had this idea, you know, and I was always frustrated by the high cost of dry cleaning because women's clothes are like 2 to 3 times more expensive to dry clean. Majority of your professional wardrobe is dry clean only. And then I would also avoid some of my favorite pieces because they were prone to like sweat stains or deodorant stains. And I looked on the market for some sort of solution that I could wear under my clothes to prevent this. And I realized that there was nothing available. And so when I was, you know, now kind of searching for the next thing to do, I just thought, you know what? I wonder what it would take to get a prototype of this. And I had no experience in fashion or manufacturing. I didn't even know another entrepreneur at this point. And I really just jumped in the deep end and I did a very extensive Google search and I found some factories in New York. We created our first prototype. And from there, it's really just been like those baby steps of asking the question, being willing to not know something and being resourceful to like figure it out.
What did everybody think? What did your family and what did your friends think?
I think my family was hoping I would get back into finance. And I think part of me hid behind it too. It's like, you feel, you know, you have this job that, you know, that is kind of prestigious, but my family was actually very supportive. And I think they knew I was going through like a very tumultuous time of trying to figure out this path. So they were very supportive of me.
So now you go, I'm sure, because you did have the trifecta. You're making great money. You're working in a sought after sector, the capital markets business, mm-hmm. and you're working for the largest bank in Canada. People just assume that you have the perfect life. What do you have to complain about? What is it that you're not happy about? But why didn't you go to BMO or why don't you go to somewhere else, right? And this is the thing that I have found over the years in meeting people and working with people is people don't really know people. People don't really know people at the core. They just assume because all the trimmings are on the turkey that it's fantastic. I think it was one of the things that excited me the most about you is you just don't see that many young kids. Regardless, you know, most of them, when they get fired, they're, oh my God, I've got to get another job in finance. You didn't let finance define who you were. You were seeking out for your own definition of who you were.
Yeah. I think for me too, one of the light bulb moments of when I just like stopped interviewing was as I was developing this prototype and sourcing trims and meeting with people, I just had this moment. I remember I was actually in a trim store in New York and I was just having fun. And then at the same time, I was like, oh, but I guess technically this is working because, you know, I am building something. And I think we have it, this story, or at least I had this story that working has to be hard and that it's like, oh, Monday, I hate Monday, can't wait till Friday. And, you know, 9 to 5. And it's just so ingrained as like the grind. And, you know, we have all these sayings that really, I think, weigh us down and really skew our mentality of what work is. And I don't care if it's Monday or Saturday, I'm maybe doing something different, especially now I have a son. And so weekends are with him, but it's just, it was for me changing that narrative and also accepting that I am still working, even if I'm not like slogging it out and like making that mental shift.
God, I love that. I love that epiphany that people find that, oh my God, you know, it's like people say to me, well, you're working. I said, yeah, I work all the time. I mean, I love what I do. And so I never consider it work. And whether someone wants to call me at 9 or 10 at night or 8 or 9 on Saturday or Sunday, it's the pleasure of it, right? So you do that first production line. Must be so exciting, right?
Yeah. We launched a crowdfunding campaign so that's how I funded our first production run. And this was back when crowdfunding was like just begun and, you know, nobody really knew what it was. So like it wasn't just like, hey, here's my crowdfunding link. I literally started like months before I knew we were going to launch the campaign, like telling people what crowdfunding is, like, you know, having to educate them on just this whole platform and the concept of it and updating them on my journey. So that when we launched, you know, they were kind of excited and felt like they were part of it. So we launched crowdfunding campaign and we launched our e-commerce site in January of 2014. And at the same time, I started wholesaling our product. So initially with the business, I did go the wholesale route primarily. So we opened, and again, this was me like in my car with my sample bag, like literally driving around Canada and the US, like knocking on retailer doors because none of them will pick up the phone or call you back or answer an email, make the sale, go to the next like small town. And so we ended up being in a couple hundred stores across Canada and the US. And then it was a classic like 80-20 where 80% of my time was spent servicing and opening these wholesale doors, but 80% of our revenue was coming from online. So in 2017, we completely shifted and now we're exclusively direct to consumer. So we're only selling through our website and we've expanded the line, grown the team. I think like there's a zillion ways things we can talk about, but definitely building out. For the first few years, I did a lot of it by myself. And as soon as I really opened myself up to the new hire, also to joining these, like if I was to do it again, I would join some of these accelerator programs earlier or the communities. Like I definitely was working by myself in my apartment for too long. Like I think reaching out to these resources, because that's really how I learned and grow and continue to, like as I build both my peer network of other entrepreneurs and especially within the tech or D2C space, my mentors, my advisors, like that's how you learn what's out there. They push you, they challenge you, and that's really like stemmed our growth.
And so, and you've won a bunch of awards along the way as well, haven't you?
Yeah, we've been on the Globe and Mail's Canada's Fastest Growing Companies list for the past 2 years. And yeah, so lots of exciting things. We've been self-funded to date, which has its challenges, but also has its opportunities, I think. So it's really kind of allowed us to learn who we are as a business and learn more about our customer and kind of the product development road that we want to go on. But we are looking at doing our first fundraising round this year. So I'll keep you posted on that one. So, you know, I think we've built a really strong foundation. And as we look to accelerate growth, kind of looking to bring on, I think now is a good time to bring on that external capital.
Well, you know, you're such a great example, not just of an individual, but of a young woman as well, who took misfortune of being fired and used it as an opportunity to find herself, first of all, and just one step after another. So when you get a chance to sort of sit back and reflect, I have three daughters and I have six kids. I wish none of them would ever work for a corporation. But because as I say to them all the time, you need to understand, corporations are disingenuous by nature. It's not their fault, but they have to do what's best for them. And that doesn't always line up to what's best for you. It's the nature of the beast, and people give far too much loyalty to corporations. But along this road, this journey and everything else, if there was one thing that you learned that resonates with you all the time, for me, and I give you my example, I find that whenever I open another door, make another call, visit another person, talk about my business, whatever it is, I can't do enough of it. And I don't know where the path is, but I know that I have to keep going down multiple paths. And I had one of these yesterday. I ran into a guy playing golf down here in Florida, and I did an assignment for him many, many years ago. I'd forgotten that. And we ended up playing nine holes together, and it's just opened a whole new door with him. And he reminded me of some things that I had said and done at the time and made a good chuckle. But that serendipity, that lesson, and that lesson for me is always just keep knocking on doors, keep knocking on doors, keep telling the story, keep talking to people, keep doing your infomercial, keep doing it, because you just don't know where it's going to resonate. What's that one for you?
It's very similar. I think that for me, it's building like mentors, advisors, peers within this space, because, you know, it's, and the pandemic has definitely not helped this, where you kind of like hunker down and you're like, hey, let's just figure it out, get through it. Even before that, like running your own business, especially as a sole founder, and you're you're just trying to get through each new business challenge. But really, in order, like you said, to have like the long-term vision and the long-term path, you need to keep making those connections. And so for me, it's the same. It's reach, like I reach out on LinkedIn to people too, and I've had actually really good like success of connecting with some mentors or advisors, or asking people I know, like, hey, I just went through this. Actually, I'm like, I'm looking to build like a formal advisory board. Do you know anyone who may be a fit? And it's kind of scary to like make the ask. And most people, they're like, yeah, actually, like reach out to this person. And then that's how you kind of learn. And because it's always like what you don't know what you don't know. And I actually start this a lot of times, especially as I'm hiring, you know, a new role or bringing on a new advisor or a new agency. It's like, I'm coming to you because I don't know what I don't know. And that's what I'm looking for, your experience. Sometimes a lot of people get stuck. They're like, okay, this is exactly what needs to be fixed. And they don't have that like open mind, like curiosity of like, okay, let's actually look at what's not working and what do we not know. And then we can find, like, I'm very good at solving problems. But sometimes I need help on actually identifying the problem, especially when I am so in the business, right? Like I'm in it all day. And so I'm blinded by things because I can't see it externally. Whereas if you bring in those new eyes and you're actually open to what they have to say, then okay, like no problem scares me. We'll figure it out. It's like, what scares me is when I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny. You know, I'm sure some of my listeners are going to go, oh God, you had her as a paid political advertising. Because much of the stuff you talk about, we talk about on a weekly basis, and especially you don't know what you don't know, and that opening of doors and talking to people. And when I look back over my career in the capital markets business, or even starting Bay Street Direct or Machu, the online recruiting. And I remember when we'd go out on the road, and you've probably had this experience, you have a list of meetings you're going to have, and you think, this is going to be a great one. And they turn out to be shit. And by the end of the day, you're so dejected, you think, you know, I just feel like canceling these last meetings. And you don't cancel them, then you go, oh my God, they were fantastic, right? And that spirit of, I'm just not going to give up. I don't know, like you, I don't know which person when I reach out to LinkedIn is going to say yes or no. But if I don't reach out, then they're all no's.
Totally.
Give me the grand vision. Like, what's I know you want to be Sarah Blakely or whatever at banks and then have a private equity firm buy it out at $4 billion or something like that. But like, what's the end? I mean, probably, I suspect, with dry clean going down because everybody's not back at work, you got to think a little more broadly about what's next for people, right?
Yeah. So there's like two roads when you're building a product-based business. There's, you know, sometimes you go down the avenue of you expand products too quickly, and then that can blow you up because now you're spread too thin from an inventory perspective, and having an inventory-based business is very capital intensive. I think I was so concerned about that. We went the other way where I was like very just focused on building out this, like, okay, this is our niche product. We're owning this category. Yes, we like have different styles, et cetera. And that, I think, to some degree limited growth, because part of growth is also new products, which is going to acquire, you know, new customers and kind of also give your, we have tons of customers who love our business, love our product, but they don't need any more undershirts. So what else can we sell to them? And so we did a lot of customer surveys and just like a deep dive. And one thing we learned was that our customer viewed us as not part of her undergarments, but part of her like day wear and part of her work wardrobe, which is now kind of blended into just your regular wardrobe. So then we dove deeper. Okay, what are other pain points that women have when they're getting dressed? And one thing that kept coming up was that women love wearing silk, but it's such a finicky fabric. Like the second you put it on, the stain will come out of nowhere. And then again, you have to dry clean or it might be just totally ruined. So we developed a line of sustainable silk that is machine washable and completely stain repellent. So like water, coffee, wine literally just like rolls off of it. So that line we launched in March of 21. So last year, so we're 8 months in. And that's really the route we're going for. So we look at our product development and we use three words that guide us, and they're practical, beautiful, and safe. So practical meaning, how can we solve a problem? And how can we leverage the fabric technologies that are in the market and bring them to your everyday wear? Because it's kind of crazy when you think about it, what we demand out of like our athletic apparel, like you would never buy athletic clothes that didn't have some sort of performance in them, right? Like that's just standard status quo. And you wear your athletic clothes, like, you know, okay, some people more than others, you know, but whatever, max like an hour a day versus our everyday clothes, like they're not working for us. So we look to solve problems. Safe is the word we use for sustainable. I know it's become a bit of a buzzword and everyone's talking about it now, but from the beginning, for the past 8 years, we really have always focused at the beginning, sourcing fabrics, packaging, looking for the most sustainable option that we can. Obviously, being a smaller business, there's some limitations, but that's really at the core of our product development and our business practices. And then beautiful, I think, is kind of what sets us apart, because, you know, you might have things that are like functional and technical, but they're not, you know, stylish and something you want to wear to, you know, feel your best every day, or again, on the sustainable side. And then on a bigger brand vision, really just building a brand that supports women for our passion is women who are like in the workforce, feeling really, you know, aligned with their vision and feeling their best every day. And like, how can we just be that small piece of your day that's going to make you feel that much better? And obviously when you're wearing something that you feel comfortable and you know you look good in, you can focus on the things that like really matter. And that's like putting your best self forward.
That's awesome. And I love the part about listening to your clients and using your clients to help guide you. People build products and then try to drive people to their product, and people go, I don't need it, or I don't want it, or it's ugly. And they go, no, but you should have it because it's really great. So I love that aspect to it. I cannot tell you how excited I am for you. I watched you throughout this whole piece. We haven't spoken for many, many years. And then I saw a post somewhere and I thought, I've got to get her on the show. So listen, a couple of things. One, don't forget me in the next round of your financing, please. You're a real joy to be with. And thank you for being with me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was really great to reconnect, and love the podcast. I've been listening as well.
So before I sign off today from the sunny beaches of Florida, I'm sorry, people, I know all of you that are freezing up there, Katie and my rest of my family. That was so enjoyable to have Michelle on. This is a young woman that I met many, many years ago. And it was just that she just had that twinkle in her eye and that desire and that, like, it's just, I don't know, this isn't the right thing I'm doing. And she didn't know what it was that she needed to do. But she's just a shining example and not just about the company that she's created, you know, while having a baby and getting married and doing all of those things, but just don't settle. If it doesn't feel right, like she said, you know, all of a sudden I realized I was working, but I wasn't really working. I was enjoying it. You can make pretty good money, or maybe you don't need as much money if you're much happier, you know, or maybe you'll be more productive if you're much happier and you make more money somewhere else. But, you know, I wanted to bring Michelle to all of you today to really inspire you to think about your happiness. That's my goal this year for 2022, is inspire people to think about their happiness, inspire you to be selfish about your happiness, inspire you to look at your life through a different lens. What is it you could do? Go out and research. Go out and find out. Doesn't matter if your family says you're crazy. Doesn't matter if your friends say you're crazy. Doesn't matter if people think you're out of your mind. What are you doing? You're giving up a great opportunity. Like, what's wrong with you, right? People thought I'm crazy all my life. And you know, the irony is, I'm finally at a point where people are paying me to be crazy, which is so ironic because I spent my whole life trying to not be me. And maybe if I'd just been me sooner, I wouldn't have had all of those years where I was unhappy. Made a lot of money, but I was unhappy. I probably would have ended up making more money. My life would have taken a different track if I'd sought out to be happy. Be happy. Don't worry. Podcast is Be You. The world will adjust. I love what I do, and I wish for you to love what you do. Have a great week, everybody.